Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah Kid Podcast. Welcome back. Good morning. We're recording this in the morning. I usually record early afternoons, but we're doing it in the morning. Saturday, this is a Saturday episode. Give you guys a Saturday episode. As I said in my previous episode, that was kind of a part one. Since I've dropped that episode, we've got breaking news. Obviously, Kalen DeBoer taking the Alabama job. Obviously, I will cover that. NFL wild card. They're calling it, the NFL calls it, they have it labeled as Super Wild Card Weekend. I think that's what it's called, Super Wild Card Weekend. So, Wild Card Weekend, we got the wild card matchups. I'm sure if you guys are not aware of the wild card matchups, obviously we'll go over it. We'll break it down. I give my prediction. We'll go from that point on. See, so like we're getting closer and closer, about a month away from the Super Bowl. I would say a little less than a month. Super Bowl is February 10th. So we're a little less than a month away from the Super Bowl. And by the end of the month, we'll know who will be representing both teams. Both conferences, I should say. But got a little bit of college football stuff that I want to cover. Mike Vrabel, we're gonna discuss his exit out of Tennessee, what that means for the Titans, how soon Vrabel probably gets a job, land somewhere, and so forth and so forth. But we're going to start with college football at the top of the episode. But you guys know how we get down. This is I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah K of the Isaiah K Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to everyone that is supporting the pod. I saw some people wanted me to talk about I think Oregon and what Texas did with Sark and Land. I get to that too. But yes, we're going to start with college football. Like I said, shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to everyone that is partaking and sharing and supporting the podcast in any form or fashion. We're on every DSP, any streaming app, any app that you use to listen to music or any other podcast, we are probably on that app as well. Spotify, Apple, those are the major ones and so forth. Google Play, whatever, you can search us up. I'll probably pop up. I'll be there. As I said, previous episode, I talked about Nick Saban retiring, moving away from Alabama, Belichick, Pete Carroll, so forth. Their franchises, Patriots, Seahawks, parted ways with them. Fast forward, we're here now, Saturday morning, and we all know that Kalen DeBoer, if you don't know, if you live just living under a rock, but it's made its way, that Kalen DeBoer is expected to be the next Alabama coach. And before I get to Kalen DeBoer, what this means, was it a good hire, and so forth, I do want to point out, I remember pointing out at the, once again, going back to my previous episode I dropped, after I got done talking about Saban, and then I started talking about, well, who's up next for the job at Alabama, I mentioned certain names. I mentioned the obvious names. Granted, I told you guys, I kind of figured Dan Lanning wouldn't go nowhere. I kind of figured Steve Sarkisian wouldn't go nowhere. I thought the two names to me, I know people brought up Dabo Sweeney. I get it. He's from Alabama. He's an Alabama guy, whatever. But the two names that really registered to me and that I thought were like actually legitimate was Lane Kiffin from Ole Miss and obviously the guy that got the job, Kalen DeBoer. I mentioned Kalen DeBoer. Now, I mentioned with Kalen DeBoer, I thought perhaps maybe the Michigan job would be a quote-unquote better fit. But like I said, I'll get to that. Before I get to that, I do want to mention something with Sark and what Dan Lanning did, and more so with Oregon, because like I told you guys, with Texas is a top three college football job. It has all of the resources. It has everything you need in terms of competing at a national level and competing for national championships. Literally, they have every resource that you need. So I kind of figured Sark has found his way at Texas. Coming off a college football playoff berth, I kind of figured he wouldn't leave Texas, right? He wouldn't leave Texas. Texas has more resources than Bama does. It's already, it's as good as a job you can get in college football. But with Dan Lanning, there was some people, and I knew, I kind of figured he wouldn't leave Oregon, but there were some people that, there were some false reports first. There was false reports that he was in Tuscaloosa. Like, that clearly wasn't true because he wasn't there. And he did not take the job, obviously. But then to clear it all up, because I, just knowing Dan Lanning and his personality, he's kind of fiery, he's kind of intense, outspoken a little bit, right? I figured we would get something. He would come out and say something about, you know, address, he would address the rumors. And little do you know, we get a video from Dan Lanning in Oregon. And basically the message in the video is really good. I would encourage everybody to go watch it. Give it it's 1 minute, so it's not that long. But basically he talks about, you know, certain issues in society, you know, for people thinking about the next step and like, what's next? Can it be bigger? You know, people trying to be happier than happy, right? But then he says, hey, he is this quote in it where he basically says, if you're scared of your coach leaving, then come play for us. And it's kind of like it's a really good recruiting tool, especially what's going on right now in today's college football landscape. But this might have been one of the most important days for Oregon football in their program's history. And you're probably like, okay, who cares? Like, great. That's great for Dan Lant. He's staying in Oregon. Right. On the surface level. But what is happening, it seems like Oregon, the program, is reaching a status that they haven't reached before. And they're reaching at this point because never in their program's history, where they have had a guy with premier options and he chose Oregon over those options. And that's essentially what Dan Lanning has, I mean, in just in two seasons, that's what he did. That's what he did by staying Oregon, staying put, not taking the Bama job. Granted, I'm sure there was interest, but not taking the Bama job. And like I said, I think this is an important time for Oregon football. I think, like, I know it might be small and people may not deem it to be that big, but here, for instance, the latest example, Mario Cristobal, he leaves for Miami. And in the time, granted, understandable, Miami has really good resources, good setup, and he's from there. He's a Miami guy, right? And I think after that, Oregon kind of felt dejected and they probably started wondering, like, are we just like, you know, Oregon, granted, we always talk about, you know, they over the past 20, 25 years, they've been a really good recruiting power, especially on the West Coast, and given some of their disadvantages, whether it's geographically in the weather and trying to convince kids from warm weather states and cities to come to Eugene and play, it's kind of hard, right? But for the most part, on the West Coast, especially for the past 10, 15 years, Oregon has done a really good job of recruiting. But I feel like they are starting to evolve. They hired Dan Lanning. He's been there for, it seems like, a half an hour, right? He's been there for just for over 24 months. And since since hiring Lanning, they have like just created this leverage. They have leveraged every ounce of what Oregon is. And, you know, usually when you think about Oregon, you think of where they have Nike. And Oregon's like, you damn right we got Nike. And that's always been like a recruiting ploy for them. But now they're using it with their coach. And, you know, like I said, I figured Lanning would come out and say something because he's bold and intense, but the program really played well. They played it well. And I will say this. I think a lot of people kind of having their fun. Like, he's 22. First, he's 22-5 in the two seasons that he's been coaching at Oregon. So he just got there, right? He just got there. But people are already having their fun, poking jokes like, hey, granted, it was 0-2 versus Washington. Didn't win the conference last year. Didn't win the conference this year. So forth, blase, blase, blase. Like I said, he's only been in for a half an hour. And I'm just going to say this. I think him coming out, he had some prominent and he had some premier options on the table. And him staying at Oregon, I think, sets a precedent. And I think, for instance, I think it's going to really catapult them in terms of when we start talking about what job is a good job. And that's the whole thing about this. Because I think Oregon checks off all of Dan Lanning's boxes. And to him, that is the best job in America. And I think that's what the video was trying to signify in a way with the message. And I'm going to just tell you this. I'm just going to say it. Oregon is going to be a force to be reckoned with, especially within the Big Ten. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. They grabbed two of the best quarterbacks in the portal. They took UCLA's quarterback and Oklahoma's quarterback and Dillon Gabriel. They're building elite line of scrimmage talent. And when I say elite, I'm not going to throw it out loosely. They're building some of the best line of scrimmage talent out west that a lot of us have seen since those early 2000 USC teams. That's the type of elite line of scrimmage talent that I'm talking about. That's what they're building at Oregon. That's what they're recruiting at Oregon. That's what they have at Oregon. And it's a huge win. Dan Lanning staying at Oregon. Obviously, it's a huge win for the program. It's a huge win for the Big Ten because, look, a prominent SEC school, SEC juggernaut, tried to lure now a Big Ten school, a Big Ten college coach. Couldn't get him. He stays at Oregon, so it's a win for the Big Ten, and it's a win for college football. But telling you guys, Oregon be a force to be reckoned with. They're going into a new conference, but I think easily, just looking at what they've been able to do with their recruiting pool, with NIL, the transfer portal, Oregon. I see no reason why Oregon can't be a top three program within the Big Ten Conference in its first year. I'm sorry. I see no reason. Obviously, you're going to have Ohio State. Ohio State's going to be Ohio State. Then, you know, the national champions in Michigan. Now, I want to see if Harbaugh stays or leaves, because if he stays, Michigan is the king of the Big Ten. And until then, you got to dethrone them. Like I said, Ohio State is always going to be Ohio State. But then I think right after that, with NIL, with the transfer portal, with its resources, with the Nike money, Dan Lanning, and what he's been able to accomplish thus far, I think Oregon is the third best program. I think it'll be the third best program in the Big Ten. Obviously, Penn State is there. USC is there. USC, I think Lincoln Riley still got to figure out the defensive thing. And Washington takes a big blow. Now, let's move on to that. Let's move on to Kalen DeBoer getting the Bama job. Now, as I told you guys in my previous episode, I thought if the Michigan job became available, I thought the Michigan job was a better fit. Now, I'm going to say this. People are asking, is it a good hire? Is it a good hire? It is a absolutely good hire. If Bama got the best candidate on the market, yes, it is an absolute good hire. Now, not too many people, even a lot of like diehard like college football fans may not even be aware of Kalen DeBoer and his extensive resume. And it's really, you look at his resume, you look at what he's been able to do, and just a I would say a short period of time. It's more, it's a lot like, dare I say, NCAA 14 dynasty mode, kind of like, kind of a sense for all my, you know, for all the people that game out there, for all the big time gamers, for all the people that love to game and stuff like that. I'm sure there's a lot of, I already know there's a lot of excitement for the new college football game that's supposed to be coming out this summer. And there's a mode called Dynasty Mode, and basically it's a coach, and you get the, you know, you have a coaching career or whatever. Kalen DeBoer is literally Dynasty Mode right now. Dynasty Mode. Lands the Bama job. Just 4 years ago, he was Indiana's offensive coordinator. Now he is the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. And it's a good hire. Now let me tell you this. Worried about fit. I was concerned about fit. And what does that mean, right? What does fit mean? For instance, Brian Kelly, LSU. A lot of people, when Brian Kelly first took the job at LSU, a lot of people was like, I mean, we know Brian Kelly's a good coach. I mean, he's won a lot of ball games at Notre Dame and so forth, but he's not a Southern guy. He's not a South guy. He's not an SEC guy, right? And I will say, I will conform to this. The bounty is still out because his first year at LSU, obviously he gets to the SEC championship game and so forth. I think I would deem that as a success for Brian Kelly's first year at LSU. His second year, it didn't go as well. It didn't go as well as many thought it would. So, like I said, bounty can still be out on whether or not if Brian Kelly is a good fit, but the first year, it does give you some optimism if you're pro Brian Kelly. The same, but I remember, and I was listening, I saw this tweet. It was a tweet from Paul Feinbaum's show, and there was a caller that called in and said, Alabama hired another Yankee. And when he said that, he was referring to Kalen DeBoer, but he basically alluded to Nick Saban being a Yankee because Nick Saban is from West Virginia. And a lot of people question if Nick Saban, coming from Michigan State, you know, coming from the NFL, a lot of people question if he was the right hire for the LSU job and the Bama job. A lot of people questioned it. And it was like, is he a good fit? He's not SEC. He's not the South. I think that's what they are. I think they're just notions. I don't know how much substance they actually carry. I do agree. You have to know somewhat of the culture, and you have to know how to deal with people. With Kalen DeBoer, I'm not worried about that. He knows how to deal with people. So what do you mean? What does he mean? Does Kalen DeBoer know the game? Yes, I think he does. Offensive genius. I'm sure he'll be bringing Ryan Grubb right down to Alabama with him. Is he a winner? Yes. I want to talk about that. He is a winner. Is he a great communicator? Yes, I think he is. And when you win, you fit anywhere. Right? You fit anywhere. So when it comes to Kalen DeBoer, the thing that really sticks out about his resume, not only, you know, obviously, I think he went 25-3 in his 2 years at Washington. But if you just take a peek at his resume, it's really good. 1997 Sioux Falls wide receiver coach. Goes back to high school. He's a high school assistant. Cool. You fast forward to the 2004. He's at Sioux Falls again as the OC. Takes over as the head coach in 2005 through 2009. Obviously, he wins a bunch of championships, a bunch of games. Goes on to go to Southern Illinois. He's the OC/receiver coach. 2014 to 2016, he's at Eastern Michigan, OC. Fresno State, he's the OC. Then at Indiana, as I said, he was the OC and quarterback coach. That's where him and Michael Penix have gained this relationship, formed their relationship. And then from that point on, 2020 to 2021, he goes to Fresno State, and then he lands at Washington, and the rest is history. What that resume tells me is, not only, it's not about him just winning games. Because in college football, you can win a lot of games, but depending on where you are, talent, conference, you can have, like, for instance, Ohio State. And this is nothing against Ryan Day, but more times than not, when Ohio State lines up and play an opposing opponent, they're probably going to have the superior talent pretty much everywhere, with the exception when they play like a Michigan or a Penn State, where, you know, Penn State may have a couple better guys, but obviously Ohio State is more times than not superior, right? Often he's won with often the second best team on the field. And I saw it literally this year on three occasions. Two times versus Oregon, where I, like me myself, I've made the argument. I told you guys, I said, hey, I think Oregon is better. I think Oregon, they got more line of scrimmage talent. I like Oregon's overall roster better than Washington. I think it's better than Washington. Kalen DeBoer beat Oregon twice. Kalen DeBoer beat Oregon twice. I told you guys, hey, going into the Sugar Bowl, hey, I told you guys, hey, if you look at all the recruiting metrics and look at all the talent metrics and how they line up, how Texas and Washington lines up, man, Texas have the edge, right? I told you guys that. But then in that same instance, I told you guys, huh? That's not how football games are decided. That's not how football games are won. And I picked Washington to beat Texas. I told you guys I was not going to make that same mistake that I made with Oregon. I am not going to let the talent fool me. Granted, like I said, line it up, talent for talent, position for position, Texas probably has better talent. Like I said, you're looking at certain recruiting metrics, Texas probably has better talent. But Kalen DeBoer finds a way. He finds a way to win. And like I've seen him do it, and it's littered all across his resume. He knows how to win, and he specializes in winning with inferior talent. Usually the second best team on the field. And, like, for instance, you know, if people are still, like, wondering or questioning, like, was this the right hire? First, I think there should be a lot of credence behind, of like, what I said, what I just said. Winning, and not just winning, but winning when you're not necessarily expected to win, or winning when you have the inferior talent. That, I think that right there, you can't put a premium on that type of coaching. Granted, we all want coaches to win championships, and we all judge our coaches by the amount of championships that they win. But like I said, the reason why Nick Saban is getting so much love this year is because any 99% of college coaches with that Bama team this year probably would have went 8-4, 9-3 tops. But some way, somehow, he found a way to go 11-1. SEC champ, and he gave Michigan all they can handle in the playoff, right? The reason why Sean McVay is getting so much love is because a lot of people thought the Rams were dead in the water, and now there's a bunch of people picking the Rams to beat the Lions in a wild card game, and the Lions had an incredible year, right? So you can't put a premium on that type of coaching. And for instance, Kalen DeBoer, he is 7-0 against Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian, and Lincoln Riley. Three coaches that I bet many Alabama fans know and recognize. And they probably would have signed those guys, or would have wanted to make those guys the successor, or I should say Nick Saban's successor. DeBoer is an X's and O's wizard. He's an offensive genius. And like I said, I think this is a home run hire for Alabama. Like I said, there are some cons, right? There are some cons to the Alabama job, right? Now, do the pros outweigh the cons? We can argue about that, but there are some cons. But I think DeBoer is fit for the job. I really think he is fit for the job, and there should be a lot of credence. If you weren't sold on, okay, he's not a SEC guy, he's not this, he's not that, whatever, he don't even have like the bubbly personality like a Lane Kiffin, or he's not like a intense, fiery guy like Dan Lanning, right? And I just got done praising Dan Lanning and what I think he's building in Oregon. But with Kalen DeBoer, he's himself. He's himself. And like I said, I think looking at his resume, judging him, looking at what he's been able to do at Washington these last 2 years, he is a guy that specializes, not just in winning, but specializes with winning with inferior talent. At Bama, he'll have superior talent. Now, obviously, Kirby Smart in Georgia, they're not going nowhere, right? Texas and Sark, they're joining the conference. Seems like Sark has found his groove and they have unlimited amount of resources, right? So they'll be there. They'll be right there with Alabama. OU and Brent Venables, we'll see how that continues to go on. Looks like they're going the right path or whatever. But, and then obviously LSU still be, you're right. So the SEC, it's deep. It's going to be competitive. So is the Big Ten. But I like DeBoer. I like Kalen DeBoer in this spot. I really do. And there should be a lot of credence behind winning, and not just winning, but winning with the second best team on the field. He specializes it. And the guy, like I said, the guys that the flashy names, the big names, no, like I said, no disrespect to Sark. I really love Sark. I think he's an offensive genius. Lincoln Riley, Dan Lanning, I like those guys. They're really great, high-end coaches. But Kalen DeBoer is 7-0 against those guys. And I don't think it's just by chance that he's 7-0 against those guys. And more times than not, with the resources that those schools, those programs, that those guys are at, Kalen DeBoer is a special one. He's a special one, and I like him for the fit for this Alabama job. I really do. Okay, so now that that is out the way, let's move on to Mike Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans situation. That is no more, I should say. Titans, I got Mike Vrabel, Titans, they move on. They fire Mike Vrabel. And, we've been covering some of these firings and so forth. And as I always tell you guys, my regular listeners, I think my regular listeners know what I'm about to say. But if for my first time listeners or, you're not a regular listener, when we talk about coaching firings, I often say not all firings are the same. Not all firings are measured at the same level. Like I said, I think it is very easy, and you can tell from a mile away that, hey, like certain guys just are about to get fired or certain guys just don't have it, right? Like Josh McDaniels and that Raiders situation, it was inevitable that he was going to be fired, whether it was going to be after the season, during the season, like it was inevitable he was going to be fired. Ron Rivera coming into this year, he knew he was on the hot seat. He knew his ass was on hot. He was on hot grease, right? He knew it. He was on thin ice. Brandon Staley's been a dead man walking since that playoff collapse versus Jacksonville last year. He's been a dead man walking. A lot of people argue could have fired him right after that game. He got fired. So, like, some of these firings, coaching firings that we're seeing around the league, some of them are obvious, and these are the obvious ones. These, like, and not all of them are the same. Now, most of them are, right? Like, just, Ron Rivera, Brandon Staley, guys who just couldn't get it done, right, for whatever the various reasons may be, guys that just couldn't get it done, and there was no upside in their immediate future. Cool. Arthur Smith, he was on the hot seat the moment he went into the season with Desmond Ridder as his starting quarterback, right? Like, That like, point blank period. He was on the hot seat. But with Mike Vrabel out in Tennessee, it's a little shocking. Now, new GM, you read some of the articles, some of the reports, you start piecemealing everything together, and you're like, oh, okay. There is a disconnect between Mike Vrabel, head coach, and front office, GM, owner. There is some friction, and you could tell that it wasn't going in the right direction. Now, Vrabel, it's funny, because coming into this year, I kind of figured the Titans wouldn't be good. Like, they wouldn't be good. I didn't think they'd be a playoff team. And earlier in the year, or before the season started, I was kind of like talking about Vrabel, and I'm like, Vrabel is such a good coach, and like, he's not gonna just, then like, the Titans are just not gonna stink. They're not gonna just win 3 or 4 games. Like, they're gonna be somewhat competitive, and they're gonna be feisty, and they're gonna week in, week out. They're just not gonna be an easy just walk over. You're not gonna just walk over them, right? But regardless, I knew that. I did not know to the extent that their division would be as competitive as it was this year. Hell, Jacksonville, who was like, I mean, everybody, I feel like everybody picked Jacksonville to win that division because there was just a lot of unknown, like Shane Steichen and, you know, the Indianapolis situation and Anthony Richardson and so forth. Jonathan Taylor had his issues with Irsay. We just didn't know, right? Texans, young, first-year head coach, rookie quarterback, you know, developing roster. We just didn't know what the make of those teams. And we kind of looked at Tennessee and went, you know, Tennessee, they'd be okay, but they won't be like a playoff team or a playoff threat. And that remained true. Now, the other two instances, the other two franchises did better than would expect it. And the Texans, they won the goddamn division. So crazy how things can change and how our perspective and how our look on certain teams can play out. Like, 2020 is hindsight, right? But with this whole Titan situation, Mike Vrabel knew the way in which they were operating wasn't conducive and wasn't going to be sustainable like it previously had been, right? Mike Vrabel's a guy. He's a dude's dude, right? Obviously, he's a former player, played for Belichick, and I think a lot of people, there's this misnomer that like he's from the Belichick tree. No. He just played for Bill Belichick, but he's not a part of the Belichick quote unquote coaching disciple or coaching tree. He's not a Belichick guy. And I think a lot of people just like run with that because he played and he was a Patriot, but he's not a Belichick guy. He coached at Ohio State a little bit, whatever, did some things with Tomlin, but he is not a Belichick guy. But in kind of like Belichick fashion, he's kind of built a culture in Tennessee. He's won a lot of games. He's been really successful. But with Vrabel, the thing that I think kind of threw off, and I'm not saying it's his fault, because I think the Titans made a huge mistake with firing Mike Vrabel. But he's been really successful. And like I said, you put these stories together and you know there is some smoke. And where there's smoke, there is fire. Vrabel has a way similar to like Jim Harbaugh where they just suck up all the oxygen in the room and they just have these big egos. And that can be really hard to deal with, especially when they're successful and things are going their way. And it just feeds into that aura that those guys have. And that can be, like I said, that can be uncomfortable for certain people. That can be difficult to deal with and hard to work with. Now, with Mike Vrabel, he was having success, and you, as front office, as ownership, you really can't push back towards it because you're winning games, you're winning ball games, and that's how it goes in any probably walk of profession, right? Like, when it comes to coaching, obviously, if you have a big ego and you know, GM doesn't really favor you, ownership, you know, the personality kind of wacky, whatever, kind of takes up all the oxygen, i.e. variable, i.e. Jim Harbaugh. It's kind of hard to knock that or go against that when it's winning, when it's successful, right? Same thing with, like, if you work at a, I don't know, you work in a private sector and, you know, you may not be the most fun person. You may not have the best personality. People may not like you, but if you make the most money, if you bring in money, if you're bringing in revenue, or you do your job highly, highly productive, you're highly productive at what you do, ownership, management, kind of hard to argue against you when the results are there. The moment the results aren't there, or there is some type of dip off or some type of drop off, then that's when, you know, they're able to pull the plug. And that's what Tennessee feels. That's what it feels like with what happened here at Tennessee. And for me, I think the mark of this whole, the start of this whole issue, or the disconnect, kind of stems from the AJ Brown trade, right? Because from the AJ Brown trade, kind of seems like this thing has gone all the way downhill. And with the Titans, they made a huge mistake. And I don't think Mike Vrabel, I don't think he okayed that. I don't think he just stood for that. I just don't think he would just let a move like that go. I don't think he was all aboard for that type of move. So from that point on, I think there was just a certain level of just disconnect, uncomfortableness. And Vrabel's like, hey, I'm a successful coach. You fire me, whatever. You got to pay me to walk away. You got to pay me to fire. You're going to fire me. You still got to pay me. And I find another job, like, easily. And hindsight, like I said, as I was explaining, hindsight is 20/20, because looking at this division, doesn't look like this division is going to get any easier. And there was, like I said, there was a clear disconnect that, like, hey, the direction the Titans were moving, and, you know, Mike Vrabel tried to steer them away and, like, hey, this style, this way that we're doing things is not conducive. And for Mike Vrabel's sake, I'm kind of glad that he's moving on from the Titans, because that division doesn't seem like it's getting any easier. Obviously Jacksonville with Doug Peterson, Trevor Lawrence, I think they had a disappointing year this year. I think Trevor Lawrence was really disappointing. But, you know, if you're half glass full type of person, Jacksonville still be there. Houston, it looks like we're going to have a problem, because D'Amico Ryans can coach his tail off. C.J. Stroud is a baller, right? And then Shane Steichen, he's one game away from winning 10 games in his first year. With an Indianapolis roster that I say that's kind of mid. So, you know, things are kind of pointing up for the most part in this division. And the Titans, what do you have to have your hat on? I mean, Will Levis had some flashes, but, you know, I mean, we don't know what to really make of that. Derrick Henry's on his last leg. Probably won't be a Titan there. He probably won't be there next year. Who knows? So I think, hindsight is 20/20. But for the betterment of Mike Vrabel, I think he got away at the right time. And the Titans more than likely probably won't hire another coach as good as Mike Vrabel for a while. Just knowing how this league works, probably won't hire another coach as good as Mike Vrabel for a while. It's going to be hard. It's going to be really, really hard. All right, so I'm going to give you guys my predictions. The moment I've been waiting for since the NFL season has really started, you know, playoff time. We're it's playoff time. It's win or go home. You guys know how this goes. So I haven't done a lot of predictions this year. I only do my predictions for, like, you know, big time games. There used to be a time I would do weekly predictions for every game, but I kind of saved my predictions for the playoffs and so forth. So can't wait. We got a slate of really good games this weekend. So hope everybody's tuned in and so forth. Like I said, I wanted to get my predictions out Right before the games have started, like I said, the NFL is calling this Super Wild Card Weekend. So we'll see how super it is. But we got a nice slate of games. We got 6 games slated for obviously Saturday afternoon, evening, and then Sunday and Monday, right? So I'm gonna do it in order. We're gonna go like this. We're gonna do Browns, Texans first. And I'm not gonna lie, I kind of talked about it in the previous segment, but the Texans, they got a good thing going. A couple weeks ago, it didn't look like they'd be hosting a playoff game. It surely didn't look like that. Now the Browns and the Texans, they faced off earlier or just a few weeks ago. CJ Stroud was not able to play in that matchup. This game is really nip and tuck for me. Really nip and tuck. This is the classic 5-4 matchup. So usually in these 4-5 matchups, or I should say 4-seed versus 5-seed matchups, the disparity is not they're not that too much apart, right? These matchups, these are usually closely, like, these are teams that's closely matched. I'm gonna probably lean with the Browns. I'm gonna lean with the Browns. I love what CJ Stroud has been able to do this year. But first year coach, first year quarterback, they got some injuries. I think this can be close. I think this has a potential. I think points will be scored because Stroud is resilient. I love the ball that he throws. I think this can be, like, points can be put up, but I'm gonna go with Cleveland. I trust Cleveland's defense a little bit more. Flacco obviously is hot. Now, who knows? Maybe he runs cold, but the Browns have had a remarkable season. Kevin Stefanski, I think, probably the favorite to win Coach of the Year. I think he stacks up that resume and he adds a playoff win to, you know, his candidacy for Coach of the Year. So I take the Browns in a close one. Don't think that's going to be a blow. I think that's going to be a pretty close game. Tonight, we got Dolphins, Chiefs. The weather is supposed to be brutal, negative 30 degrees wind chill. So I think there's going to be probably snow on the ground. Granted, Kansas City's offense does leave you for cause for pause and for, you know, concern. But I just can't find myself picking Miami in this type of game in these type of elements. I love Kansas City tonight. I think Kansas City wins. Granted, they've had some receiver issues. They've had some offensive issues. Their defense, for the most part, has been stellar. But then I'm looking on the other side with Miami. You know, Tyreek Hill's not fully healthy. Jalen Waddle, I think, is out. I think Raheem Mostert is out. I know Bradley Chubb is not playing. Jalen Phillips is not playing. So Miami, a little banged up on both sides of the ball. I'm just not compelled that Tua and Mike McDaniel, who I really like, I'm not sure if they can, with the style of play, with their style of football, with their scheme, I'm not sure if they're going to be able to put up enough points and be efficient as they usually are versus Kansas City. Bad enough that their defense, Kansas City's defense, is really good. You add on top of the weather and the elements, I'm going to take Kansas City. I think Kansas City wins this game, kind of like 27-17. I think I'm looking for a score like that, 27-17 Chiefs. All right, 1 o'clock game tomorrow, Sunday, Bills, Steelers. Bills, another team, you know, it was looking kind of dim. I didn't think the Bills, if they did make the playoffs, I didn't think they'd be, you know, a month ago, I didn't think they'd be hosting a playoff game. But here we are. They're hosting a playoff game. I have a similar take to what I just said about Miami. I'm not sure if TJ Watt's going to be playing. I doubt if he is. If he does give it a go, he won't be close to 100%. I'm going to take Buffalo to win this game. Buffalo's at home. I love Buffalo at home. The element, like I said, the weather will be a factor. But with Pittsburgh, I'm not so sold on their offense. They have too many offensive issues and offensive identity. Now, Najee Harris has played better over the past several weeks, right? They have found some type of running game, but I can't see Pittsburgh pulling off an upset in this spot. It would have to take a colossal collapse from that offense and Josh Allen and the way they're playing. Buffalo's defense is playing at a super high level as well. So I like Buffalo to win this game. Kind of like I said, similar take to the Miami and Chiefs game. I just can't see Pittsburgh winning on the road with their offensive issues. Buffalo kind of rolling right now with steam. I like Buffalo to win this game. Next game on the docket, we got the Cowboys versus the Packers. It'll be an AT&T Stadium. Two big brands in the NFL. Jordan Love. I mean, and I know Kevin Stefanski is going to get a lot of love. D'Amico Ryans is going to get a lot of love. Dan Campbell is going to get a lot of coach of the year love. But can we take some time to talk about the job that Matt LaFleur has done with Jordan Love? I mean, now Jordan Love can absolutely play, right? He threw for over 4,000 yards, 32 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, led the Packers to the playoffs. But Matt LaFleur has developed him, the play calling, like, it seems like throughout the year, LaFleur and Jordan Love just got comfortable and more comfortable and more comfortable. They find themselves in this spot. And Jordan Love, mind you, Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love, they did all of this while Detroit was in the division, while no 1,000-yard receiver, Aaron Jones was in and out of the lineup, right? Like, it hasn't been all easy, right? It hasn't just been ready-made, and the table was just set for Jordan Love to have this type of success, right? So, I don't think Matt LaFleur is going to win it, but we should give him some Coach of the Year love as well, at least a thought, a mention, right? But I think they're running into a buzzsaw in Dallas. Dallas has a 16-game winning streak at home. I like Dallas a lot in this matchup. I think Jordan Love may be able to make some plays. Think he'd be able to score some points. I'm just not sure if this Green Bay defense will be able to calculate enough stops, generate enough stops versus Dak and the boys. CD is balling, had an all-pro year. He made all-pro team, first team all-pro. Cowboys actually had the most all-pros this year. So, really good depth on both sides of the ball with this Cowboy team. I got Dallas in this one. I do think it'll be close. I think at some point Dallas will probably pull away. I think I got Dallas by like 10 points. Cowboys win. Sunday night game, Rams, Lions, man. I'm going to go Rams. This is a tough one for me, but I'm going to go with the Rams. I think the Rams win this playoff game. I think McVay, I've been talking about it with Kalen DeBoer, but McVay this year proved how good of a coach he was. You can't put a premium on when coaches overachieve. And I feel like the Rams, they found in their groove at the right time, the last back end of the month of the season. Matt Stafford, he's hot. And versus this, when I'm looking at with Williams in the backfield, with Stafford and him being hot, and Stafford is he's a gunslinger at heart, with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, I don't know if the Lions are going to have an answer. I think this game has the potential, has shootout potential. I think this game definitely does have shootout potential written all over it. I'm going to take the Rams, though. I think they win in a closely competitive matchup, offensive firework. I take the Rams, though. Lions got some injuries and so forth that I'm worried about. So we'll see. But I got the Rams. And then lastly, Monday Night Football, Eagles, Buccaneers. Just got word A.J. Brown won't be playing due to his knee injury. Jalen Hurts, he's banged up. Both teams are limping into this matchup. And I'm just not sure who I want to lean with. I think I'm going to go with Philly, but I am not sold on it. I'm going to lean Philly. I think Philly narrowly wins. I think New Orleans, if the Saints, I don't know how the Saints didn't make the playoffs. Well, I'm not going to go into all that. I think they were huge underachievers and a disappointment. But I feel like the Saints would have, that New Orleans environment would have been a harder environment to win in. But the Buccaneers got the spot. Buccaneers won a division. But I'm going to take Philly. I'm going to lean Philly. This is probably going to have to be a game where Philly relies on their line of scrimmage play on both sides, defensive line and the offensive line. I think it'd be imperative that Philly can run the football because we don't know how Jalen Hurts and that finger, we don't know what that finger or what the status of that finger is. And then now you X out their best receiving threat in A.J. Brown. So I think it's imperative that Philly establish some type of run game. They're not going to be as explosive over the top as they usually are because they don't have A.J. Brown. And then Philly's defensive line has to come and play. Baker's a little banged up right now, but Baker, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, they got some – Buccaneers got some guys that can, you know, beat you over the top. So in order to protect Philly's secondary that we know is atrocious, that defensive line is going to have to come in play. Like I said, this is really a toss-up for me. This is the hardest prediction for me this weekend because I Philly – in their last six games, obviously they're 1-5. They started off 10-1, finished off 1-5. This is a big spot for Nick Sirianni. I'm not even going to lie. This is a huge spot for Nick Sirianni. Huge spot. And a lot of it kind of stems from, okay, like, granted, I know people are like, well, he got to the Super Bowl. Yeah, he got to the Super Bowl. But a lot of people were questioning, okay, he doesn't have anything to do with the defense. He doesn't call offensive plays. What the hell does Nick Sirianni, what does he do? And I am starting to become of the belief when it comes to these coaches, especially these young coaches, I need you to be a play caller, whether it's an offensive or defensive play caller, because the whole CEO coach, and Nick Sirianni, he's 40. He's young. He's a 40-year-old coach. Him being a CEO coach is just unacceptable because I'm left here asking myself, what does he do? What does he do? Shane Steichen, offensive coordinator for the Eagles last year, now the Colts head coach, he won 9 games. He was a drop pass away from winning 10 games in his first year as a head coach with, I would say, a mediocre Indianapolis team. And I know Jeffrey Lurie's like, okay, we won 11 games. Shane Steichen in his first year with Indianapolis was a drop away from being a 10-win coach, a 10-win team. Why in the hell is Indianapolis one win, why is Philly one win better than Indianapolis? Why? And I know Jeffrey Lurie has to be asking this question. Jonathan Gannon, granted, Arizona wasn't great this year. We knew they weren't going to be great. We knew it was going to take a year or maybe two for them to bounce back. But Jonathan Gannon went into Philadelphia. He's the DC. He was the Eagles DC. Went into Philadelphia, absolutely embarrassed and beat the Eagles at home. Unacceptable. unacceptable. And so if Nick Sirianni, I'm not trying to make just a hot take, but if Nick Sirianni, if he loses to Todd Bowles and Baker Mayfield in a wild card game, I feel like everything is on the table. I feel like everything is absolutely on the table if Nick Sirianni loses and cough up this game. I'm going to choose Philly. I'm going to pick Philly to win this game. But boy, I am not sold on them at all. I'm not sold on the Eagles. I think this is going to be a pretty close game. And like I said, if Sirianni loses this game, I'm not saying he should be fired. But all I'm going to say is, everything is definitely on the table if Sirianni loses this game. But we'll see what happens. I'm going to end this pod right here. I hope you guys have enjoyed this. Hope you guys are listening right before the games. So you can hear my prediction, hear my take, hear my thoughts. And, you know, after the games on Monday, I'll be checking back in with you guys. And we'll go from there. But always remember, two choices, one decision. And I hope, like I said, I hope you guys enjoy it. Peace, deuces. I am out.